Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 10th. Craddock still critical of nuke waste bill. Representative says legislation excluded language, leaving region in jeopardy. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. State Representative Tom Craddock told those at Midland Country Club for the Midland County Republican Women's Luncheon on Wednesday that he still believes the bill passed to ban nuclear waste in Andrews is a bad bill. The Midland Republican also said there are companies lined up and ready to deliver their waste to the Permian Basin because the House Bill 7, quote, changed the definition of nuclear waste, unquote, and it left out needed greater than Class C waste language. Craddock said there are companies ready to bring 40 years' worth of waste to Andrews County because of this mistake in the legislation, which was co-authored by Brooks Landgraf of Odessa. Landgraf currently represents Andrews County in the Texas House. The Texas Tribune reported during the debate last year that while Landgraf wasn't, quote, automatically opposed to including the greater than Class C waste in the proposed ban, he didn't want to assume that his constituents in Andrews County wanted the additional regulation on the site, end quote. The article also stated that Landgraf, quote, advocated for simplicity and speed since federal regulators could decide on the license application before the end of the year, unquote. Craddock reminded the Republican women and their guests of the, quote, nuclear waste that is ready to come to the state of Texas because of this bill, end quote. Quote, it's going to take 40 years working 7 days a week to take the waste that is sitting available to be moved today, not the waste from today on, Craddock said. And I don't think we want that in Texas. I sure don't want it in my backyard. Craddock worked to kill similar legislation during the regular session, but the bill came back before legislators in a special session. Quote, this is a bad bill, people, Craddock said. Craddock also told those in attendance that the bill doesn't require the storage in the ground. Quote, you don't want it buried now, but have you been to West Texas when we have had a sandstorm? End quote. In September, Governor Greg Abbott and the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality asked a U.S. appeals court to vacate a license issued earlier in the month for construction of a high-level nuclear waste storage site in Andrews County. The lawsuit filed by the Texas Attorney General's Office with the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals claimed that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's decision on September 13th to issue a license to Interim Storage Partners violates Texas law. The license authorized the company to receive, possess, transfer, and store up to 5,000 metric tons of spent fuel and 231 metric tons of greater than Class C low-level radioactive waste for 40 years. ISP has said they plan to store the waste until a permanent repository is built. The NRC issued the license days after Abbott signed House Bill 7. Sales tax report indicates rebound. Most significant collection of year up 17% since 21. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. If sales tax is an economic indicator, the Midland economy is nearly back to pre-pandemic levels. The city of Midland reported $5.7 million in sales tax collected during the month of February. That is a 17% increase over February 2021. More importantly, it was the second largest collection for the month of February, arguably the most significant collection of the year, because it represents spending that took place during the Christmas holidays in December. In fact, the amount this month was around $33,000 less than the record for February, $5.7 million in February of 2019. The city also reported receiving $22.7 million in sales tax through 5 months of the fiscal year. That total is an increase of 13%, or around $2.5 million, compared to the same point in fiscal year 2021. The city reported that it was the fourth straight collection increase of 17%+, following a 17.6% increase in November, a 20.19% increase in December, and a 48.5% in January. Sales tax revenue is generated by sales tax income from 2 months prior to collection. February collection is based on December sales. The city's fiscal year runs from October through the following September. The county's sales tax collection increased by more than 49% year over year in February to $5.19 million. County Judge Hopefuls debate issues in broadcasted forum. Experience versus vision at core of candidates' talking points. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. The debate between county judge candidates Tuesday night turned into a contrast of experience versus vision. During the Basin PBS debate, Terry Johnson and Jonna Smoot were asked about the position of county judge and what they would bring to the position. Other topics included the Horseshoe Multipurpose Facility, roads, water, employee issues, and law enforcement facilities. Johnson used the hour-long broadcast to talk about his accomplishments, while Smoot took the opportunity to state where she differed from the incumbent and how she will create a vision that will be developed from conversations from Midland County residents. About the position of county judge, Smoot said she would give the position her undivided attention, resign from her position at a local bank, turn her attention to issues like water and infrastructure, and work on employee morale. Johnson stated that as CFO, he would use skills that have served him well in business to deal with a $200 million budget. Johnson also said he's been able to turn his oil field services company over to others to run without much oversight. About the use of $34 million in federal relief funds. Johnson wants to improve the road system so it can stand up to the rigors of the oil industry. He said the county has hired consultants to help in the spending of federal funds so the county doesn't mess up by spending money outside of the federal guidelines. Smoot said she would listen to constituents, hold community forums, and stated she hasn't heard much from county leaders on this issue. Quote, not as transparent as it could be, is how she described it. On the Horseshoe, both talked about the multipurpose facility being an asset to the county. Johnson explained his issue is the deal between the county and whoever is running it. He said he doesn't expect the facility to run in the black. He did again note on the amount of money that the deal allows the operator to make on concessions, while the county, with all its skin in the game, is left with little in comparison. Smoot said the facility has been managed professionally and that leadership gave the facility legitimacy from day one. She said looking at the deal is part of the county business, but believes the agreement has been, quote, twisted into a narrative, the Horseshoe is operating well and serving the community well, end quote. About water. This was an area where maybe the two showed the most disagreement in the job that is currently being done. Johnson took the opportunity to talk about the negotiations happening with the city to use its pipeline, how he's helped bringing multiple entities to the table, and how bringing water to the county has been an issue for decades. Quote, if it was easy, it would have been done long ago, Johnson said. He mentioned how he's accelerated the process compared to predecessors. Smoot questioned the results of the 3 years and 1 month Johnson has been county judge. Quote, today, we still do not have water in the county that is reliable. I don't understand it, end quote. She stated there was no timeline in place by county leadership and that she will show the community a list of priorities and how the county needs to make those priorities happen. About money spent on roads. Johnson talked about projects like Cotton Flat Road and Midkiff Road and how they were built to handle the traffic, including oil field vehicles. He stated that the hiring of a special project coordinator has been a benefit and also noted the $30 million spent in 3 years in Precinct 3, which he said was a dramatic increase compared to his predecessor. Smoot said it is difficult to get the contractors for the 440 miles of road and that the loop will add to that maintenance. She said spending tens of millions is a good number, but it can't always be accomplished. About development of the South Loop. Smoot said she does not see it because of the need for water. There is a need for the road, but there is also a need for a vision, plan, and leadership to accomplish it all, she said. Quote, I don't see us having a road if we don't have the water, end quote. Johnson said the right-of-way is nearly all purchased, paving is set to happen, and he envisions having two lanes all the way around in 5 years or so. He stated that one needs to just look at the North Loop to see the growth in the tax base that will follow. About county employee salaries. Johnson stated he voted against the 4% pay raise during the pandemic. He said there were lots of people working from home for weeks and that no one missed a paycheck. He stated he prefers merit raises, so the people who do more make more. Smoot said, quote, in municipal life, employees are there for a long time, and when the court can give raises, it absolutely should. About sheriff's office vacancies. Smoot said vacancies require people to have a plan and sometimes have different ways of doing things. Johnson talked about morale at the jail, that pay would go a long way in that respect. He said he wants to raise the level of pay to what exists at the Midland Police Department and other sheriff's offices around the state. He said raises for those at the jail have been tough, quote, without giving everyone else in the county a raise, end quote. About a new jail. Johnson said county residents have gotten the most out of the current facilities and that the number of beds needed is likely to increase to 750 or 1,000, depending on population growth. He said that building a new facility or making improvements might require a bond. Smoot said the county can't have the jail in the state of disrepair and that people working on the front line deserve the best that can be provided.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, February 10th, 2022. Community Roundup. Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast. The annual Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast will be held from 7 to 8:45 a.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center. Food service will begin at 6:45 a.m. This prayer breakfast will have a panel of prayer warriors moderated by Carla Smith. Individual tickets are $10 and table sponsorships are $200. There is a complete sponsorship form online at www.npbmidland.org. Mail checks to Permian Basin Prayer Breakfast, 10 Desta Drive, Suite 100W, Midland, 7905. Citizenship Fair. Several local organizations have joined forces to collaborate on the Citizenship Fair from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. February 26th at the Midland College Allison Fine Arts Building. The event is free and will help individuals better understand the process of gaining U.S. citizenship, according to a press release from the Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center. The Citizenship Fair is an opportunity to help community members across the Permian Basin better understand the process of gaining U.S. citizenship. Attendees will have the opportunity to visit informational booths, attend presentations, go through a mock citizenship interview, and possibly win a prize. Presentations include an overview of the citizenship application and a mock interview. Participating organizations include the Permian Basin Adult Literacy Center, Catholic Charities Odessa, Midland County Public Library, Workforce Solutions Permian Basin, Casa de Amigos, Midland College, Midland College Cogdill Learning Center, Odessa College, Literacy Coalition of the Permian Basin, and Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. Black History Month at MC. Midland College is hosting two events for Black History Month. Master storyteller Oba William King fuses the tradition of African storytelling with instrumentation for an interactive exploration of folk tales and other original pieces. The event will be at noon, February 18th, at the Wagner Brown Auditorium. Regina Mills, author of Invisibility and Influence, A Literary History of U.S. Afro-Latinidads, will deliver an engaging and insightful historical exploration of Afro-Latinx in the U.S. and beyond. The event will be on Microsoft Teams at 7 p.m., February 22nd. Event schedule. Cinderella, 7:30 p.m. Friday and Saturday, February 18th, February 19th, February 20th, February 25th, and 26th at Midland Community Theater. Wagner Knoll 10-year mini birthday party at Vintage Deluxe, 4 p.m. Thursday at Vintage Deluxe. Give Your Finances Some Love, 4:30 to 6 p.m. Thursday at Second Story Co-working. Film Series, 6 p.m. Thursday at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. Authors at the Ector, Elizabeth Wetmore, 7 p.m. Thursday at the Ector Theater. Mike Ryan with guest Cody Hibbard, 9 p.m. Thursday at Rockin' Rodeo. Love Without Limits, 6 p.m. Friday at Stonegate Fellowship Church. Chad Prather, 8 p.m. Friday at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Cupid's Arrow Valentines, 8 p.m. Friday at Woody's Hideaway. Cinderella's Royal Breakfast, 9 a.m. Saturday at Midland Community Theater. Boss Babe Market, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday at Tall City Brewing. Introduction to Astronomy, Binocular Basics, noon Saturday at the Marion Blakemore Planetarium. Kansas, Point of No Return Tour, 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Vinyl Brunch, 10:30 a.m. Sunday Vinyl Brunch, 10:30 a.m. Sunday at Beryl and Derek. Galentine's Day benefiting Safe Place of the Permian Basin, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Sunday at the Selfie Museum. Super Bowl Sunday, 11 a.m. Sunday at the Tailgate. Super Bowl Party, 2 p.m. Sunday, VFW Post 4159. Free Super Boil Sunday, 2 p.m. Sunday at Fair to Midland. City of Midland Career Fair, 3 p.m. February 15th at Bush Convention Center. The Mavericks, 8 p.m. Tuesday at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Steve O, 6 p.m. Wednesday at the Ector Theater. Midland Dog Show, February 17th through the 20th at the Horseshoe Arena. Third Thursday Reading Program, 4:30 p.m. February 17th at George W. Bush Childhood Home. Motown Experience, 6 p.m. February 17th at the Selfie Museum. Speed Dating with Midland AF, 6:30 p.m. February 17th at Tall City Brewing Company. Film Series, 6:30 p.m. February 17th at the Ellen Knoll Art Museum. Parents Survival Night, 6:30 p.m. February 18th at the Little Gym of Midland. Pecos and the Rooftops, 9 p.m. February 18th at Dos Amigos. Rise and Run, 8:15 a.m. February 19th at Centennial Park. Third Saturdays in the Garden, 10 a.m. to noon, February 19th at West Texas Food Bank. Gaither Music Group, 6 p.m. February 19th at Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. The Journey, a celebration of Black History Month, 2 p.m. February 19th at the Museum of the Southwest. Wedding Open House, 1 p.m. February 20th at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center.
Here are several obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, February 10th. Alberto Albert Deanda Rivas, age 70, of Lenora, passed away on Sunday, February 6th. A funeral mass will be held at 2 p.m. on Thursday, February 10th, at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Stanton. Interment will follow at Evergreen Cemetery. Albert was born August 19, 1951, in Shirley, Indiana, and married Laura Denise Mitchell on July 24, 1970, in Lenora, Texas. Survivors include his wife, Laura Denise Rivas of Lenora, and four children, Jason Rivas and Sean Rivas of Stanton, Brenton Rivas of Lubbock, and Sherry Woodward of Tarzan. He is also survived by numerous grandchildren. He was preceded in death by his parents, Juan and Carolina Rivas. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Bradford Lee Graves was born January 22, 1964, in Midland, to Maddie Graves Carter and Benny Lee Graves. Brad attended school in Dallas, Texas, and Midland, and later went on to Midland College. He is preceded in death by his father, Benny L. Graves, his sister, Carla Denise Graves, his brother, Brady L. Graves, and his stepfather, Alvin Carter. He leaves to cherish his memory five sons, Brent Graves, Brad Graves, Rashawn Graves, Braddock Graves, and Robbie Graves, a daughter, Brayla Graves, five brothers, Benny E. Graves, Kenyatta Leary, Weldon Carter, Don Carter, and Ron Carter, three sisters, Karen Cookie Graves, Cheryl Smith, and Shun Carter, a host of grandchildren, nieces, nephews, uncles, aunts, and cousins. Viewing will be Thursday, February 10th, from 4 p.m. to 9 p.m., with a receiving of friends from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. Thursday evening at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Friday, February 11th at 11 a.m. at Goodwill Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Cora Hansen, age 95, of Midland, died on February 7th at a residence in Manor Park. Funeral services will be Thursday, February 10th at 10 a.m. at First Baptist Church in Stanton, with burial to follow at Evergreen Cemetery in Stanton. She was born on February 28, 1926, in Wingate, Texas, and married Lynn Henson on January 16, 1964, in Seminole, Texas. Lynn and Cody farmed in the Tarzan community for 24 years before retiring in 1988. She and Lynn then moved to Stanton. Survivors include two sons, Stephen Wood and wife Nikki of Canyon, and Les Wood of Midland, five grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and one great-great-grandchild. She was preceded in death by her husband, parents, several brothers and sisters, two daughters, and granddaughter. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to Stanton Senior Citizens at Post Office Box 1233, Stanton, Texas, 79782. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home in Stanton. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Eddie Gamboa passed away on February 5th. Eddie was born in Stanton, Texas, on May 22, 1960. He was raised in Midland and was a native Midlander. He is survived by his loving wife, Sylvia Ochoa Gamboa, and his three children, Christina Gamboa and Jennifer Humphrey, Samantha R. Gamboa and husband David Ramirez, and Philip Ed Gamboa, four grandchildren. He is also survived by his father, Cruz M. Gamboa, brothers Ramon Gamboa and wife Christy, Saul Gamboa and wife Joanne, sister Gabriela Franco and husband Cesar. He will also be remembered by his parents-in-law, Fernando and Sally Ochoa, and brothers-in-law, Fernando Ochoa Jr. and wife Erica, Hilbert Ochoa and wife Katie, Ruben Ochoa and wife Cecilia, and numerous uncles, aunts, cousins, nieces, and nephews. The family will receive guests from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. Thursday, February 10th, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel, along with a celebration of life service to take place from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Funeral service will be held at 1 p.m. Friday, February 11th, at Community Baptist Church at 5200 West Illinois Avenue, with interment following at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lori Dawn Bailey passed away on February 4th. Lori was born on August 16, 1970, to Paula Jordan McRae and John Robert McRae in Midland. Left to cherish her memory are her husband, Levi Bailey, of Horseshoe Bay, Texas, her parents, Paula and John McRae, of Fredericksburg, Texas, Her sister, Brandy Tripp, and brother-in-law, Mark Tripp, of Lubbock, Texas. A memorial service will be held at Life Marble Falls Church at 1901 Mormon Mill Road in Marble Falls, Texas, on Saturday, February 12th at 10 a.m. Luncheon will follow. Online condolences may be made at www.clementswilcoxfuneralhome.com. The family requests that, in lieu of flowers, donations be made to either of the following in the name of Lori Bailey: Highlands Lakes Canine Rescue, Post Office Box 1275, Marble Falls, Texas, 78654, Wildlife Rescue and Rehabilitation, Post Office Box 369, Kendalia, Texas, 78027. Sedalia Beatrice Brown Montgomery, age 88, of Midland, also known as Miss Poor John, passed away on January 30th. She was born on February 4th, 1934, to Josephine Jordan. She shared a 47-year union with John Montgomery before his passing. Within that union, Sedalia and John raised their two sons, Joseph Darnell Brown and Elston Montgomery. Sedalia and Poor John together owned and operated Poor John's Barbecue and Packing Company for 32 years before she retired at the age of 75. Sedalia Montgomery was a woman of wisdom and grace. She is preceded in death by her parents, sister Queller Woods, husband John Montgomery, and her two sons, Joseph Darnell Brown and Elston Montgomery. Sedalia leaves to cherish her memory her daughter-in-law, Elsa Montgomery of San Antonio, daughter-in-law, Bridget Benson of Dallas, her special friend, Gloria Udley of Greater Ideal Baptist Church, as well as several grandchildren, great-grandchildren, great-great-grandchildren, and other relatives. Services for Sedalia will be held on Friday, February 11th at 1 p.m. at the Greater Ideal Baptist Church at 301 South Tyler Street in Midland, with interment following at Rust Haven Memorial Park. Services are under the direction of Jackie Warren of Jackie Warren Funeral Home, Midland, Texas. Gloria Hernandez, age 70, of Midland, passed away February 8th. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. Sunday, February 13th, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, February 14th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven North Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Irene C. Ornelas, age 61, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, February 8th. A memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Saturday, February 12th, at Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelsh.com.
Good morning, this is Kim. I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Thursday, February 10th, 2022. Board to wait on appointment. Ector County ISD trustees reached consensus to wait about a month to begin the process of filling the District 7 spot formerly held by Nelson Minyard. During a workshop Tuesday, Superintendent Scott Murray said redistricting is going on, so the district will have more information on board districts at the end of February or early March. All the board members were in attendance, and Vice President Steve Brown attended virtually. Murray said it would be a disservice to appoint someone and then have the district change. Mike Atkins, attorney for the district, said the district has 180 days to fill the spot. An Austin attorney was hired to help all the entities with their redistricting process. Minyard has been on the board since 2013, and his current term expires in 2025. Atkins previously said that anyone that is appointed will serve until the next election cycle, which would be May 2023. If that person chose to run, or anyone else chose to run, they would fill a term from 2023 to 2024. The board also heard from Daryl Pearson of PBK Architects and Engineers on options to reduce the amount of a proposed bond. The recommendations of the bond committee were to build a new comprehensive high school, $183 million, a career and technical education center, $70 million, technology upgrades, $15 million, and facility lifecycle repairs. Also, Priority 1 lifecycle needs, $52.8 million, and Priority 2 lifecycle needs, $122.3 million. The committee also recommended keeping the bond under $400 million and having the election in May. The board recap said Priority 1 and Priority 2 are definitions from the firm evaluating the conditions of all facilities. Priority 1 are projects that should be addressed immediately in the next 1 to 2 years. Priority 2 are projects that should be addressed in the next 3 to 5 years. With district leaders and architect, trustees reviewed 3 different options for reducing the cost of the lifecycle needs and the overall cost of the bond package. Option 1 would remove athletic items, frost, greenhouse, and miscellaneous paving and sidewalk items, roofing, HVAC, electrical, plumbing, and ancillary facilities. Bond cost would be reduced to $420.4 million. Option 2 is Option 1 plus removal of all Priority 2 scopes of work except mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, things like roofing, waterproofing, paving, signage. Bond cost would be reduced to $398.2 million. Option 3 is Option 1 and 2 plus removal of Priority 1 architectural and civil items like paving repairs and millwork, plus all Priority 2 scopes of work in Option 2 above. Bond costs would be reduced to $397.6 million, the recap said. The board seems to be leaning toward Option 2, which was $398 million. Option 3 would be $397 million, and Option 1 would be $420 million. From a process perspective, Murray said, the board would have to call an election on February 18th to have the election in May. The next board meeting is February 15th. Murray said he and his team will look back and see if there are additional adjustments they can make. He said they don't want to make any adjustments that could cause harm, but it becomes difficult when you try to decide what to cut because the district has older buildings that need repair. On a separate item, the board got a quarterly update on the progress of ECISD's strategic plan. The board recap said the report started with an update on 2 of the indicator of success that are tracked regularly. The first, attendance rate, is down 90.7%, which is attributable to the high number of COVID absences to start the spring semester. Positive cases have been declining rapidly over the last 2 weeks, and that is good news. The district's attendance goal for this school year is 94%. Kindergarten readiness is a key factor in a student's academic success, and that number is up considerably, 13 percentage points, rising from 33% meeting kindergarten-ready thresholds in October 2020 to 46% meeting those thresholds in October 2021. The 46% hitting kindergarten readiness standards also exceeds the district's goal for the 2021-22 school year, the recap said. In 2020-21, ECISD changed 4-year-old pre-kindergarten from half-day to full-day and this year greatly expanded 3-year-old pre-kindergarten to include many more children, the recap said. This presentation also highlighted the implementation of equity-based funding, which provides more dollars to schools with higher percentages of economically disadvantaged, special education, and bilingual students. Use of learning management systems, Schoolology for grades 3 through 12, and Seesaw for grades pre-kindergarten through 2nd, for providing online access to assignments, activities, and discussions, and high-impact tutoring, which shows strong evidence of being one of the most effective ways to increase learning gains for students, the recap said. The recap said the district has designated $6 million in federal ESSER funding this year to support approximately 6,000 students with weekly virtual tutors who personalize their learning and help them recover the COVID learning losses. In his opening comments, Superintendent Dr. Scott Murray congratulated the Permian High School football team for being named a state finalist for the National High School Academic Excellence Award, sponsored by the National Football Foundation. He visited the team earlier in the afternoon to congratulate the players, coaches, and teachers on this incredible accomplishment. In a public comment, David Munger, a counselor from Odessa High School, offered 5 observations he feels are reasons why smaller high school campuses are better for student success than the large, comprehensive campuses that have been traditional to ECISD. Floyd Gwynn rehab ahead of schedule. Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton received some excellent news last week from those taking care of the Floyd Gwynn Park project. They are way ahead of schedule and we are below budget. Those are 2 things that are music, good music to my ears, I tell you. A lot of projects are not like that these days, Patton said. I think everyone involved, the landscape architect, Kelly Cook, and those contractors are very conscientious about the funding and everything that is going on and keeping everybody in line on what's up and staging everything. In August 2019, Odessa City Council members voted to take on $93 million in debt for various capital improvement projects, including a $6 million renovation project at Floyd Gwynn, the city's 2nd largest developed park on 45 acres. The project includes walking trails and renovations to the baseball complex and basketball, volleyball, and tennis courts. In addition, the playground area will be expanded, as will the pool area. Several pavilions will also be added along with a new irrigation system and concession building with restrooms. As of February 1st, Patton said, the tennis, volleyball, and basketball courts are 90% complete. The lighting on the pedestrian path and the athletic fields are 75% complete. And the baseball complex and parking lots are about 50% complete. He said the walking trail is 40% finished and the park's entire irrigation system is at 35%. They've not yet started on the pavilions or playground, but the design for the playground should arrive this week, he said. There's all kinds of activity going on at the baseball complex. We're trying to get that up as quick as we can so that baseball can move back to Floyd Gwynn from McKinney Park. The parking lots are under construction. You'll see a lot of asphalt being laid and the grate being adjusted and a lot of equipment there, Patton said. There's a new fence going around the swimming pool that's currently being installed. And part of this contract also was to add the 4th building at the baseball complex at Sherwood, and that's under construction right now too, the Little League baseball field. Right now the project is expected to be finished by July 31st, but bad weather, supply chain issues, and delivery issues could change that, Patton cautioned. What I've been told for the manufacturer is that one of the biggest problems is their manufacturing plant has been hit with COVID, Patton said. They're short on labor, thin steel is what playground equipment is made of, and that's hard to come by. There's a backlog of steel, and it's really expensive. They've gone up in price, and all the resins that go into making the plastic pieces are in short supply, limited supply, and getting delivery on all that. So it's depending on what pieces are there. They will assign a tentative date once you pick it and pay down on it. A lot of people are excited to see the finished project, Patton, who has been with the city 32 years, said. It's a great project that's going to make a huge difference in that park, Patton said. There's not been a major renovation in that park in many, many, many years. None since I've been here. In related news, Patton said he is working to get members of the Parks Department Advisory Board together to discuss a master plan draft. The last plan was created in 2015, and the draft now sitting on his desk is ready to be discussed. We spent months, if not years, on the public input process. 800 surveys were received, and we had 5 community meetings throughout the community, Patton said. We had 2 different sets of consultants come here to help us gather all that information. Once the consultants had the public's input, they researched other parks and recreation programs similar to Odessa's and made a list of priorities and recommendations using national standards too, Patton said. Odessa's newest park was built in 1994, and there are no parks on the north and east sides of Odessa, Patton said. He noted that Midland's parks have 3 times the acreage of Odessa's. Right now, we are trying to get everybody together in one room at the same time. We're working on that, he said. New economic development chief offers new vantage point. Tom Mansky may be a new arrival to the Permian Basin, but the Odessa Chamber of Commerce economic development director is no stranger to the field. Mansky took over from Wesley Burnett February 1st. Burnett now works for Nacero, a natural gas-to-gasoline plant in Pinwell. Mansky has been involved in economic development since 1988. He started in economic development with the Dangerfield Main Street Program, a downtown redevelopment program, soon after earning a degree in geology with an emphasis on urban planning from what is now Texas State University. Texas State was previously Southwest Texas State. Mansky, who grew up in Irving, has also gone through the Institute of Organizational Management at Southern Methodist University and the Economic Development Institute at the University of Oklahoma. After serving in Dangerfield for a couple of years, Mansky became Economic Development Director for the city of Port Arthur. From there, he went to Rockwall, where he started working in economic development in a chamber environment as in Odessa. I really like the organizational structure and the setup, Mansky said. Over the years, economic development has changed considerably. There are sales taxes communities can vote in. A 4A sales tax, which Odessa has, is designated for direct employment, bricks and mortar. A 4B sales tax is for direct employment, bricks, mortar, and some community development. Some communities have both, Mansky said. Communities didn't have that, and then all of a sudden you realized you needed to have it to compete, Mansky said. When I went up to Fort Smith, Arkansas for 6 years and ran their chamber, it was tough to compete with Texas. We did, and we were successful. But when you look at everything that's been happening the last 20 years, a lot of it has to do with state law that's been passed in Texas that made it so competitive, and it put it at the local level. He added that 90% of his efforts in Fort Smith went toward economic development, and someone else ran the chamber side. Through their economic development boards, communities will often set expectations for certain dollar amounts or a certain number of jobs, so you're not just giving away money. You've got policy in place, he said. From the end of 2018 to the present, Mansky was in insurance in Forney, but kept his eye on economic development. However, he had stopped looking because he and his wife Stephanie were building a house. The couple has 2 daughters in Midland. Someone in the organization reached out to me, and when they described the situation here and everything, And I didn't see that it was going into a volatile situation, he said. Mansky said he missed economic development and wanted to get back into it in the right environment. In my insurance office, we had taken things virtual, and so you weren't out and about dealing with people every day, and I kind of missed that part of it, Mansky said. Having a diversified economy is important, and it does alleviate some ups and downs, but you also have to dance with what's brung you, Mansky said. You've got the workforce here. Now, are there new technologies coming out in energy that we want to tap into? Clean energy and other things like that? Certainly. If you look at our target industries, energy's there. Logistics, medical, Tyler is a good example of that. They've wrapped a lot of their economic development efforts around healthcare, and it's helped them grow. You have to visit your targeted industries every so often to see if you need to make adjustments, he said. At the same time, you have to be realistic and not expect to snag the headquarters of Merrill Lynch, for example. Mansky said he is scheduling meetings to meet as many people in local leadership as possible during his first 90 days. I want to get educated about everything here and what the leadership is thinking, and then share my thoughts, he said. Mansky noted that the reason Austin is booming is because companies want to tap into all that Austin talent. When you're graduating 20,000 kids a year, they feel like they can get their hands on it, Mansky said. While Odessa may not be Austin, this is a center of the energy industry, and the people are great. Somebody told me early on that people come to Odessa kicking and screaming, but then, if they have to leave later, they leave kicking and screaming. And I've actually seen that, Mansky said. The $7 billion Nacero project was recently landed, and he said there are a lot of good things going on there. Mansky said that he believes he can bring his outside expertise, add it to what's going on, and maybe elevate the program and make things better. He said he's big on collaboration, and it's here to be a team player. Mansky added that Odessa has the city, the university, Odessa College, and the Chamber of Commerce. COVID-19 news. By the numbers, COVID in the basin. Ector County, 36,504 total cases, 626 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 6 students, 0 staff. Midland County, 35,745 total cases, 457 deaths. Texas, 6,451,449 total cases, 81,064 deaths. U.S. cases, 76,976,575 total confirmed and 906,603 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Free drive-through COVID-19 tests. The City of Odessa Incident Command is partnering with Curative to offer the COVID-19 PCR test drive-through from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday at the corner of 2nd Street and Grant Avenue. Insurance information will be requested. If no insurance, test will be free. To book an appointment, visit curative.com. City of Odessa, in partnership with DOCS Health, have scheduled drive-through COVID-19 testing from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Sunday at the UTPB Community Sports Fields parking lot located at 191 and Loop 338. The entrance will be located on the 191 Access Road, 42nd Street, and exit will be on Loop 338. The site will have both PCR tests and rapid antigen tests available. This will be the second COVID-19 testing site set up by the city with no out-of-pocket cost. No appointment needed. However, online registration is available. Testing is subject to daily availability of material. PCR test results are expected within 2 to 3 days in most cases, and rapid test results will be a 15 to 20 minute wait at the site, or you can receive your results through text message. To pre-register, visit docshealthtesting.com or text DOCSTX to 41411. Health insurance information will be requested if available. For more information, call the Docs Health Call Center at 267-362-5207. Moderna Vaccine Clinic, Ector County Health Department, 221 North Texas Avenue has scheduled a Moderna Vaccine Clinic from 8:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. and 1:30 p.m. to 4 p.m. today. First and second and booster doses are available for 18 years and older. For more information, call 432-498-4141, extension 0.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.